And we're back. Episode 30, Mike, and Oscar.
The big 3-0. I wish I was the big 3-0 again.
Yeah, I just stopped being the big 3-0, and I'm sad. Just sad all the time. We're doing the Oscar nominations. They're here. It's time. January 23rd. We kept talking about it. We said it's coming. It's on the horizon, and it's here. Andy Serkis and Tiffany Haddish told us all about them this morning.
We covered most of the big nominees with our Oscar Sprint profiles. We've been covering this race for a while, and feeling kind of validated today.
I asked you when you came in, are we the Academy?
We're movie people. I think it's official.
That's amazing. Like, listen, we don't do the projection thing and all that like we keep telling you, but we've predicted all of this. We're the greatest people on earth.
Look, I'm laughing at my own jokes like Bill Maher right now, but in all sincerity, we feel good that we picked some movies that really got a ton of noms. We've reviewed a bunch of the major contenders already, figuring that we wanted to get a jump on those one movie reviews. So those Oscar Sprint profiles, that's what they are. They're one movie reviews. Easy to avoid spoilers. Go back, check out all those episodes. Give you your fix.
Yeah, and speaking of the Oscar Sprint profiles, before we get started in diving in the review of the nominations that came out this morning, we're going to do, like we try like to do every once in a while, go through some social media stuff, give some shout outs to people who've been commenting. Our Darkest Hour post got a lot of comments. Marcelo really? Palermo on Facebook said superb. We Ooh. Had Constance Davis saying that she loved this. Thank you for that, Constance. Thomas Newsome, Gary is overdue for a best lead actor Oscar. I thought the movie was a bit slow, however. Seems to be in line with what I thought, whereas you thought it was a little bit more of an entertaining movie for your liking.
That's just your alter ego on Twitter, isn't it? You have multiple accounts.
Mike1/Thomas Newsome. We had Rick Miyakawa. My apologies if I mispronounced that. A sure Oscar winner. Gary Oldman, 4 gold stars. Hmm. And Sandy Parker Conkle saying, Gary Oldman is so versatile. Hope he does win the Oscar. So it seems to be, a lot of the backlash that he faced online through social media. Maybe people are starting to forgive it, forget it, side with him. I don't know. But you could see a lot of love for his performance in Darkest Hour, at least to the public.
We tried to present the case about the allegations and go through those in that episode. Go back, look at it. We really didn't fall on one side or the other. We just kind of presented it. So
nobody sits on a fence like Mike, and Oscar. No, you're right. I mean, we talk about the ugly stuff here, and you have to. And like we keep saying, if all the fallout from this, if part of the fallout is that we have to take a minute to think about some serious issues before we talk about the fun and escapism that movies are supposed to offer, I don't think that could be a bad thing.
So, James Franco.
Oh, good God.
Out of the running.
I think time might be up on his career, huh? That was a huge... And another thing we pounded the pavement on.
Right.
Would that Time's Up backlash have an effect on any of the Oscar noms? Would Gary Oldman see a backlash from it? Would he hurt his nomination chances?
We did take a side of the fence, though, on Franco.
And it happened. I mean, It happened sure, right as rain. He's not anywhere seen in the Best Actor category. It hasn't been the winner of the comedy, Golden Globe, Best Lead Actor, Comedy and Musical, hasn't not been nominated since Paul Giamatti, I think it was in 2010, I want to say.
Wowza.
So it's been a couple years.
Did I just say wowza?
James Franco, not around. So we're going to dive in now. This is not an Oscar Sprint profile. It's more of a hot take, more of a retrospective. Want to introduce what we're doing going forward. Let's start there. Going forward, in the coming weeks, we're going to give you more Oscar Sprint profiles. We're going to complete the picture of the Oscar Sprint profiles for all the big nominated movies.
There's 5 more. Phantom Thread, All the Money in the World, Roma J. Israel, Esquire, The Big Sick, and Mudbound. We're going to record Phantom Thread tonight. That'll be next. And then we'll get the other 4 done by the end of next week.
And those are a matter of... Because of the nominations. We left ourselves a little leeway to see what the nominations would be. And when they came out, we'd...
Fit our schedule perfectly. I don't know how. I mean, this is a first-time programmer over here in terms of the radio programming. And I nailed it. I had four extra spots. We had 4 extra nominees.
Have we patted ourselves on the back enough for you people right now?
But seriously, we're going to have Oscar Sprint profiles for the big 7 categories that we cover.
Yes.
Screenplay, director, picture, and the 4 acting.
Then... Afterwards, once those Oscar Sprint profiles are all done, we're going to devote an episode, much in the way that we did the Oscar Sprint profiles, to every major category. We're going to have a Best Picture nominee show. We're going to have a Best Director nominee show. Same with each of the acting profiles, screenplay, etc. You can hear that noise in the background. My dog, Shocky, is
joining
us.
She wanted Baby Driver. And
she is, she's got a little separation anxiety. Her brother, Moose, is away. Got a doctor's visit today because he's got some health issues of his own. And she doesn't do well on her own, so she's on the couch next to us and striving for attention.
We're dog people.
So that's going to be our schedule going forward. We're going to give you single-shot episodes. We're going to give you a deep dive into all these nomination categories. We'll have a Best Director episode where we go deep into the nominations for that. We'll have a Best Picture episode, a Best Supporting Actress, so on and so forth. As far as predictions and projections from us going forward, we're still up in the air. We have a couple ideas we're batting around as to how we're going to present those, but we will at some point present those to you. Those seem to play well. People kind of like the hot takes that we have. And
we should have placed bets in Vegas, dude. We would have been done all right.
Well, let me tell you for a fact, I've done that, and I could have told you how that would have ended up had that happened.
just with other things.
Yeah, this microphone would have been sold. So,
Mike, why are you talking into your cell phone?
Here's another picture of what's coming up. We're definitely going to cover some movie event stuff, such as the Black Panther movie coming out in February. That's going to be another movie event akin to what our Star Wars event pod was. We're going to do our bread and butter, which is kind of our retrospective pods, which is how this whole podcast started. Once the Oscar season is over and we have a little more downtime, we're going to get more into the retrospective, the biggest upsets, the biggest races, recovering some of those, taking a look back, seeing the years against which they were viewed. So we got a lot in the fire for you. We're not just going to be, you know.
People don't change.
We're not going to have dead air for you.
We've been crazy for a long time.
We're not the NFL red zone, you know, between Sundays where it's just a testing pattern and waiting for us to come back. We're going to be a year-round pod, hopefully. And we got entertainment for you all the way across the board. So hopefully you'll keep tuning in and we'll keep churning out these episodes and we'll find a happy medium for
and
all
of us. And seriously,
tell
us what you want to hear.
Oh, absolutely. Without question. I mean, listen, we can't thank you guys enough for tuning in, for telling your friends. We're having a wider base, it seems. We're growing a little bit. That's exciting. So your input is what matters because you're the guys that keep this, you're the guys and girls that keep this pod going.
I feel popular for the first time in my life. I was ignored most of my years on this planet.
And it gives Mike a chance to talk through his issues, which is nice. So
yeah, we don't really hold back. I'm pretty honest.
So let's
TMI the pod.
That's what we got coming up. Let's talk about right now what we're doing. Tiffany Haddish and Andy Serkis presented the Oscar nominations, the 2017-18 Oscar noms. They're finally here. They're in our hands. We're going to take it from the most important. We're going to give you what everyone wants to talk about first. We'll start with Best Picture.
I wish Serkis was like Snoke for half of the episode and Caesar for the other half of the episode. I was a little disappointed by that. But Haddish was funny, man. And that's an awkward time to be funny. That early in the morning on the West Coast, 5:22 a.m., she was breaking like a Saturday Night Live thing where she was laughing middle of the nominations.
Right, it is awkward.
And let me be honest. We've been just sticking our feet in our mouths for 30 episodes trying to pronounce all these
murdering,
not just the big
names. Yeah.
Some of the big names.
Anything that's not Mike, we kind of trip over.
Yeah. So I can't blame her for not being able to be a cunning linguist like we've become, actually. So we're going to get them all right now, I think. But
yeah, no, we're perfect from here on out.
Yeah, no, the growing pains are over.
Right. So let's start with the Best Picture nominees. This year's Best Picture, there are 9 of them out of a possible 10. We have Call Me By Your Name, The Darkest Hour, which is not the, by the way. I keep calling it The Darkest Hour. It's
That's
just
the
Darkest Hour.
Emil Hirsch.
Emil Hirsch is The Darkest Hour.
Right.
Probably why they didn't have the V in this title.
2011 sci-fi film.
The group of 5 teens going to Moscow to fight an alien invasion. That's nominated
for
Best
movie.
Picture. Dunkirk, Get Out. Get Out gets a Best Picture nom. Lady Bird gets a Best Picture nom. Phantom Thread gets a Best
Shocker
Picture nom.
Shocker right there.
Yeah. The Post.
Yeah.
Much to also Mike's chagrin. The Shape of Water, which led all movies with 13 nominations. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Figured.
And 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. It's gotten a lot of momentum, but it also got cut down a little, which we'll talk about with these noms. But it has been one of the favorites with Shape of Water for winning Best Picture going in.
We're not projection people like we said yet, but we do and we have incorporated GoldDerby.com and the Feinberg forecast into our podcast thus far. Feinberg predicted 7 out of 9 of these Best Picture nominations. Exchange Darkest Hour and Phantom Thread for I, Tonya and the Florida Project, and you would have had his 9, so he hit 7 out of 10. GoldDerby.com, basically they canvass all of the experts, all the major critics out there in terms of their predictions. And here's how it played out. Call Me By Your Name, 6 weeks ago, had 30 out of 32 predicting it for Best Picture, and the same 30 out of 32 for its final prediction.
And keep in mind, all these Gold Derby stats are taken from prior to the announcement this morning, these final stats. And that's kind of the interesting subject, one of the things that you can reflect on. Mike has all the Gold Derby stats that happen up to date as of right before the nominations being announced this morning. As we get into these single shot episodes going into the categories, we're going to see how those change post the announcements.
You can
morning.
Follow the whole race back with our older OSPs, and going forward, we'll actually have Oscar nominations finally to talk about with these other five OSPs.
For sure.
Yeah, Darkest Hour, 26 weeks ago, 20 of those critics predicted it, 17 predicted it in their final.
Wow, so it lost a couple. That one was a surprise. Darkest Hour getting Best Picture. I saw a couple people on Twitter get a little raising their eyebrows at that getting a Best
Picture.
Surprise
for us as well. Yep. We didn't have it ranked this high. Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, The Post, and The Shape of Water. All 32 critics predicted it 6 weeks ago. All 32 predicted it yesterday. So Gold Derby nailed those five for sure. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri had 31 out of 32 6 weeks ago. All 32 predicted it yesterday. So that's six that they nailed.
The one person that missed it 6 weeks ago.
Phantom Thread was a big surprise.
Big one. Big one. Latest movie to come out for consideration. Came out, went wide, I think, the new Christmas Eve. Just got in under the wire.
We've been preparing for that. We've been preparing for that episode tonight, and we were ready to rage.
Yes, the both of us were very, very upset. Mike had seen it a couple times already. I had just seen it for the first and only time yesterday, and listen, Leslie Manville.
Leslie Manville was great.
She is unbelievable. We keep saying how loaded. Sorry, you could hear my dog hacking up along. We keep saying how loaded the Best Supporting Actress category is. She, I can't believe she had no momentum. From the screeners, from the critics, there was nowhere. So beyond happy to see what happened with the nominations today. But man, was she great in this movie.
Yeah, only 6 weeks ago, five critics had it up for Best Picture, and four had it up for Best Picture yesterday. So that was a major surprise. Like I said, Feinberg didn't have it either.
Wow.
But yeah, we're ready to rage tonight when we recorded the Phantom Thread pod. Why isn't it nominated for this or that? You know, we knew Daniel Day-Lewis in costume design, but it's nice to see director and picture and Manville.
Surprising, yeah. Very, very, one of the more bigger shocks, I think. I mean, this being nominated for Best Picture, Darkest Hour being nominated for Best Picture, and you have I, Tonya, the Big Sick, kind of on the outside looking in right now.
Right, and that sound you've been hearing is not Sally Hawkins tap dancing down the apartment room hallway. That's just Mike's dog. Click, click.
So, are you all set? You keep going.
That's it for me and Best Picture.
Let's review the nominations. Last year, again, there were only nine. It's possible to have 10 Best Picture noms, but they've kind of been short of that the last couple years. But last year, it was Manchester by the Sea, Lion, La La Land, Hidden Figures, Hell or High Water, Hacksaw Ridge, Fences, Arrival, and the eventual Best Picture winner, Moonlight, which we all remember had probably the biggest gaffe in Oscars history, as Faye Dunaway announced that it was La La Land, and Moonlight ended up winning.
We'll talk about it. They put some new procedures in so those accountants don't screw it up again. Price Waterhouse or wherever they're from.
I think it was Ernst & Young.
They will fund nothing we do for the rest of our lives after that snippet.
But yeah, interesting. I mean, last year the Best Picture kind of went to the more indie route. Moonlight wasn't a big blockbuster.
Right.
This year you would think the favorite going in. I mean, like we said, Three Billboards, more of an indie picture, has been winning. Shape of Water. Is Shape of Water an indie? I mean,
nah, well, it's a lower budget,
yeah.
But that seems to be up there with Three Billboards. We have another take on it. We think another three movies are tip top, or four movies perhaps. So, you know, stay tuned on that regard.
Shape of Water, just for sake of argument, $20 million budget, little less than $20 million.
Dollar for dollar, they did a great job, no question.
Listen, people are tripping over themselves with this movie, and we keep saying.
I rewatched it once, listened to our Dancing with Mermen pod. It got a lot of play. The dog is
doing her best, Sally Hawkins. Yeah, that was a really good analogy you just made. But I apologize again and for the click clacking and the noises you hear. But my dog, as you can hear, she has a little separation anxiety from her.
Yeah, body. We got to let her hang out with us.
We'll move on then to Best Director, which I am beyond ecstatic about to have seen this list. A lot of this stuff we've been campaigning for and calling for, and we said we didn't understand. We hope the Academy picked up the slack for other people.
Natalie Portman was heard.
Yeah, good for her, good for women, good for everything, good for the Academy. Best Director categories nominees are Paul Thomas Anderson, Phantom Thread.
Shocking.
Maybe a bigger shock than Greta Gerwig and Jordan Peele getting in.
Definitely.
Guillermo del Toro, Shape of Water. He's been winning everything up to this point. Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird. Christopher Nolan gets it for Dunkirk. His first Academy Award nomination for all of the Memento and The Darkest Night and all that. He finally lands one. And Jordan Peele, first timer, Get Out, gets the nom there for Best Director.
Again, we're still kind of rewatching Shape of Water. Maybe we'll come around on that, baby. But Phantom Thread, Lady Bird, Dunkirk, Get Out, these are tip-top on my list going into this week. Again, we're going to keep rewatching and re-ranking, but I feel validated with that five. Paul Thomas Anderson just felt undeniable to me. I was ready to rage tonight when we recorded that OSP.
That one really surprised me.
Yeah, Greta Gerwig, Nolan, and Peele just seemed like no-brainers. And to look back, I think the critics actually nailed some of this. Guillermo del Toro, all 32 6 weeks ago, all 32
He's
on Goldberg.
Yep.
Goldbergy or Gold Derby now.
They have a good burger.
31 out of 32 had Greta Gerwig 6 weeks ago and yesterday on Gold Derby. Nolan, 31 out of 32 6 weeks ago, 30 out of 32 today. Jordan Peele, 27 out of 32 6 weeks ago, and all 32 predicted him yesterday.
Welcome to the party.
And Feinberg had 4 out of 5. He, like everybody else, missed Paul Thomas Anderson. He had Martin McDonagh in there. Most people did.
I will say, I didn't see a lot of Paul Thomas Anderson being predicted at all by any expert.
Nobody.
Martin McDonagh not getting the cut. This is why I say I don't know that Three Billboards is being taken as seriously as a Best Picture contender. We know the history between needing a Best Director nomination and being a Best Picture winner. It doesn't happen much. You don't usually win Best Picture if you're not at least nominated for Best Director. Argo, of course, being the most recent example standing out with Ben Affleck not getting a nomination, but winning the Golden Globe for Best Director in 2012. Yeah, Paul Thomas Anderson for me. Beyond happy that Nolan got his first nom. Beyond happy that Gerwig and Peele, as two first-time directors, Gerwig, I know, did some co-directing, but her first solo venture directing movie.
It's
great to see them.
It's insane that you got two debut movies here. I mean, in a profession that is this difficult, where you got to be like a CEO on set running this major operation.
You got to be the GM and the coach, basically.
You got to wear a million hats. Mm-hmm. And for them to pull off compositions this good, we've been saying it for months, this good in their first time out is extraordinary. But is it shocking? No, because we know how talented they've always been.
These are the movies that deserve it this year, yeah. Right? Is it shocking?
It's like the Academy actually watched the movies.
Or listen to us, yes. But last year, the Best Director category went Barry Jenkins for Moonlight.
I don't think I can pat my... Yeah, I can pat myself on the upper back. It's almost the neck.
If I do that, I collapse into a heap.
I need to do yoga.
Why are you here? I'm not giving myself the proper credit I deserve. I'd like
I
to stretch P90X out my arm.
I did P90X once, and yoga was involved.
So just PX then.
Listen, I needed like P180X to really get my weight down.
Last year's Best Director category, Barry Jenkins for Moonlight.
That's
Kenneth
a joke
Lonergan,
I've been saying for years.
Kenneth Lonergan for Manchester by the Sea. Mel Gibson, I don't think he would be nominated this year after the social movements, but Hacksaw Ridge. Denis Villeneuve.
I apologize
for murdering that
French
name.
French people.
Arrival and obviously Damien Chazelle.
Much more sophisticated than us.
Damien Chazelle winning it for La La Land. So again, we went the La La Land route there. We had a couple big budget ones.
Right.
Give it to Peele or Greta Gerwig. I know it's going to be tough to see Christopher Nolan not get it. He's been a favorite of ours since we did our Dunkirk show.
Yeah, but at least the mix is right. You know, if they pick one of those four, I would have a problem with Guillermo del Toro. Not that I don't love his movies for
yeah,
5 years.
Yeah, but it's just, we said this. And it's
we're
going
to have to lock ourselves in a room.
Yeah, it's not
Clockwork Orange, our eyeballs, and watch
this
Shape
of Water
again and again.
This is the year to give it to del Toro, and everybody's giving it to him. We'll see what happens.
I will say this. I liked it more upon
rewatch.
We watch. I liked it more when I saw it with my dad, of all people, who who loved it.
That's so...
My dad and my brother, we had a movie night, we saw it, and they loved it. I was shocked. These guys are steak eaters.
You know, there's people that come out of the woodwork. Kumail Nanjiani, I remember reading on Twitter, said that the one movie that has stuck with him over and over again as he left the theater was Shape of Water. And it's just... I don't know why it's lacking for me and for us, you know. We're movie guys. Look, and it's just there's something
this
missing.
This movie melted those big Italian manly hearts, and I'm shocked at it.
And Pakistani, apparently. We'll move on then to Best Actress category, the Best Lead Actress, the nominees. Sally Hawkins for Shape of Water. She was a big Gold Derby favorite the whole year. Frances McDormand is the one that's been winning everything. Margot Robbie getting in for I, Tonya. Nice to see on a personal note. Saoirse Ronan for Lady Bird. Would love to see that. And, you know, we need a fifth nominee. So here you go, Meryl. Here's your 800th nomination. Can we said this in our post episode. Can we just give Meryl... I'm glad to see her nominated. She's a delight in everything she does. She's probably the greatest actress. Her, Betty Davis, one of the greatest actresses ever.
She carried that movie, yeah.
But can we give it to her? Like, can we just start giving her when she's going to win? Because she's not going to win for this.
Yeah, it's tough because she's great in everything, like we say.
Right. I mean, I got no problems with her actually getting the nomination, but at some point, it's like you don't want to tarnish her legacy by getting all these nominations either, which is a weird thing to say.
We've done a retrospective with her in it, and you had her number one in that year. Just looking at it again, I wonder how many Meryl Streep pods we could do where, on rewatch down the line, we
think she should
rank her number one.
But in 20 years, if we do a 2017 Best Actress pod, are we going to re-rank Meryl Streep above Sally Hawkins, Frances McDormand, Margot Robbie, Saoirse Ronan? Probably not.
Yeah, for other performances, I would probably agree. For this one, again, among one of the best casts ever assembled, she stood out and carried that movie.
No question. No question to both those points.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, in terms of how the critics did with their projections, Feinberg nailed the five, and most people nailed the five going in, to be honest. But Feinberg is dead on a lot of the time. And this year, he was a little less so because it was more unpredictable, but he's usually dead on.
Feinberg's outstanding with the prediction game. We've talked about how this is a weird year overall, not just because of the Time's Up movement, Hollywood finally opening its doors, like Mike said in our last episode, to the other half of the population, not just letting white men run everything.
Right.
Wide open year. I mean, the acting categories are kind of taking shape now after the Golden Globes and the SAGs and the Producers Guilds. Best Picture is wide open.
It's going to be a fun final month, for no question about it. And this category might be more open than we think. Listen, 27 out of 32 had the five yesterday on Gold Derby. Annette Bening had one. Jessica Chastain had four people voting for her. 6 weeks ago, it was, if I can do math, 25 out of the 32 had the five. So this has been the big five for a while. And other than Bening, Kate Winslet, Jessica Chastain, you know, most people have chosen Ronan, Robbie, Streep, Hawkins, McDormand. And McDormand's winning a lot of the awards right now, but we've all analyzed Robbie's performance, Ronan's performance. Sally Hawkins was a darling for the longest time. And Meryl Streep's always good. And like you said, maybe people are getting fed up with the fact that she's nominated so often and not winning.
Listen, I want to clarify my tarnish her legacy. Obviously, you're not going to get tarnished if you're the most nominated actress of all time, but the ratio now, it's going to turn into a punchline at some point. Yeah,
it's almost LeBron James going to the championship every year.
Yeah.
Jerry West.
Yeah. I mean, I feel...
More wins.
I want her to win more because, obviously, like you said, there's other times where she should have won and she got passed over, but she got passed over because people figure, oh, she's in there every year.
Right.
It hurts. It's not right, and I would like to see her have more chances to take home more Best Actress trophies. The only gripe I'll have... As we said in our first episode, my leader in the clubhouse for Best Actress was Jennifer Lawrence in Mother. She was one of the top three
she got nominated for
a Razzie.
I can't believe that.
Oh, my gosh.
Mad. She's still top six for me right now. Again, I'm juggling, but after I've seen some of these recent movies. But, yeah, she was awesome in that, I thought, too.
Yeah, I don't – I mean, certainly not Razzie. You know, Razzie is Halle Berry and Catwoman. That's a Razzie.
Razzie is just backlash against that movie by a lot of people.
Best Actress last year, we'll go through it. Meryl Streep again for Florence Foster Jenkins. Natalie Portman for Jackie. She was the leader in some realms. Ruth Negga for Loving. Isabel Humpert for Elle. And Emma Stone, the eventual winner for La La Land, where she played the character.
You didn't like it. Emma Stone. I loved her performance in that one.
Probably worthy. I could see. I was pulling for Portman myself. But again, Streep nominated. Probably wasn't going to win last year either. We got to do something about this.
She was funny in that movie, though. I can't believe I liked that foo-foo, silly New Yorker, bougie.
You have a tougher side, but you have a heart of mush.
Total mush.
Best Actor as well. We'll go next. The nominees: Timothée Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name, Daniel Day-Lewis for Phantom Thread, Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah.
Get Out. Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour, The Favorite in the Clubhouse. Denzel Washington getting in there for Roman J. Israel Esquire. Who's missing by this from this list?
James Franco getting the backlash last second. Now, but here's the thing. We weren't all that high on his performance in our very first Oscar Sprint profile. I think we kind of wrapped our heads around the fact that he was going to be nominated based on the Golden Globes. And we liked the performance. So this was another example of a loaded category. We were screaming for Daniel Kaluuya since the very beginning. In the last pod, talking about Tom Hanks, The Way They Lied. Denzel Washington.
I like how your The Way They Lied voice is the same as your robotic pronunciation of Kaluuya voice.
I suck at voices. Listen, I was screaming about how Denzel, how Kaluuya, how Chalamet were so much better than the Hanks performance. And we love Tom Hanks, and he's a total movie star in that role, but he's not Ben Bradley. He's Tom Hanks with a wig, which is great. I'll pay to see that every single month, right? But it's not what Denzel does in Roman J. Israel and what Kaluuya's been doing to us this entire award season, going back to Get Out and rewatching that 1,000 times. I'm glad. I feel like they got these right for the most part. Yes, you can make an argument for Franco and Gyllenhaal. We've talked about them throughout the process. But these five are worthy, and that just feels right.
Yeah, it's rare. Like I said at the top of the show, it is rare for the Best Actor in Comedy or Musical Golden Globe winner to not be nominated. To not be nominated for an Oscar. It's something that hasn't happened, since Giamatti won the Golden Globe, didn't get nominated for Barney's Version in 2010. But it's not so rare that it's, oh my God, eye-popping. It's not so rare that it's, oh my God, eye-popping, because that Giamatti omission was the third year in a row it had happened. The two prior to that were Robert Downey Jr., who won the Golden Globe for Sherlock Holmes.
You haven't looked down this entire time.
He won the Golden Globe for Sherlock Holmes as Best Actor. In 2009,
been some bad years for comedies.
And Colin Farrell won it for In Bruges in 2008. So there is precedent. It's not that outlandish. What makes it outlandish, obviously, is the story, and everyone supposes the reason why Franco's being omitted from this list. As far as the nominees that did make it, absolutely, we were all about screaming for Kaluuya to get in. Here's my question to you: who kept Tom Hanks out? Was it Kaluuya or was it Denzel Washington?
I hope it was Denzel, because that would mean Kaluuya got more votes. I think Denzel's always strong. He might have a Meryl Streep problem. But again, Tom Hanks wasn't worthy in this five. I don't think so.
No,
Chalamet was the guy who burst on the scene and surprised everyone. You know, we'll eventually touch on projections for next year's Oscars some point over the next 2 months. And Chalamet would be like that unpredictable guy that we won't hit on at the beginning of our next year, right?
And he'll just pop out.
Right, and Kaluuya a little bit too, but Kaluuya was coming out with that movie in February, right? So,
and he had more of a history too. I mean, he was great. I haven't seen it, but all the reviews say he was great in the Black Mirror turn that he had.
Oh,
he's done
awesome.
Some BBC shows, so he's got a little more
He's
tape
a thespian
on him.
With a capital T. If you ever hear him speak, I mean, he's super duper British, which is always plus points. But yes, it's...
I get irrationally angry when I learn that people that have convinced me they're American when I see them on TV and film speak in interviews and have thick British... Hugh Laurie's another one. Like, how dare you deceive me?
So Daniel Day-Lewis is done with acting, right?
In quotes, sure.
We hope not, but we hope he comes back wearing the 4-5 someday. But he is done with acting, and we're finally about to meet the real Daniel Day-Lewis during all these promotional videos for and promotional tour for Phantom Thread. And why does he look like a 1990s alt rocker with a flannel short sleeve shirt?
I can finally be myself.
Tatted arms. He's got two earrings in his ears with a shaved head. I mean, he looks like he's coming out for Sublime. he's the new lead singer of Sublime.
I don't practice Santeria.
What is happening there?
I would like to see him be an amalgamation where he keeps one piece from every character he was methoding throughout his career. Yeah. Like, he has no left foot, a top stove hat.
Dude,
he's a seamstress now.
He only has a left foot in that movie. I guess we're going to have to go back to that. He can only move his left foot, and he's a painter.
You know
with
what
foot.
I meant.
That's funny.
Anyway, best lead actor last year, the nominees. Denzel, again.
Oh, I wanted him there.
I thought he was going to win, actually.
He should have won the award.
There was a lot of late momentum. I see what you did there. There was a lot of late momentum towards giving it to him. You could tell, that picture where Casey Affleck's giving the acceptance speech and the camera goes to Denzel, who's fighting back tears. My heart was ripping apart because you could tell how much that Fences performance meant to him and how badly he wanted to win. But Denzel was nominated for Fences. Viggo Mortensen was a surprise last year for Captain Fantastic. Ryan Gosling got in for La La Land. Andrew Garfield for Hacksaw Ridge, which I had a huge issue with. Hmm. And Casey Affleck was the winner, Manchester by the Sea, which I know you had somewhat of an issue with.
Yeah, I mean, the performance was great. I liked the Denzel performance better. I hated Casey Affleck's history, and I did not like Manchester by the Sea as a movie. That was a me issue. I'm in the minority on that one, but I was really pushing hard for Denzel. We weren't on the record back then. We're on the record now, so you may or may not believe me. I don't know.
It also doesn't count. Doesn't count as us being wrong. Take that. Best Supporting Actress is where we'll go next. Couple surprises in this. We've said again since episode number one, Best Supporting Actress is probably the most loaded category this year. And it showed with some huge surprises in their nomination. The nominees are Mary J. Blige for Mudbound. Huge surprise getting in the Oscar noms. Allison Janney, I, Tonya is the favorite. Laurie Metcalf as well was the favorite up until Allison Janney started winning all the awards.
Right.
Laurie Metcalf for Lady Bird. Leslie Manville for Phantom Thread. Both Mike and
Shocking.
I did high fives and backflips once we saw that. And Octavia Spencer for The Shape of Water, which is also a surprise to me. I mean, I know she had some momentum, but I just didn't think that the momentum was real enough to carry her to an actual Oscar nomination, yet here she is, and God bless her for it.
Another category with five worthy nominees. It was going to be hard not to, you know, have five that you could say, okay, in any year, this feels like a nominee, right?
Big year for supporting actresses.
Right. So, I mean, there's probably eight or nine of those worthy nominees out there. Hong Chau, obviously. Holly Hunter, one of your faves.
She was
favorites. We're going to re-rank these when we do our Best Supporting Actress podcast, and it's going to be fun. I mean, it's a wide open field still in terms of the Mike and Oscars, never mind these Oscars. And I think Allison Janney she's in the lead, but Laurie Metcalf got a ton of critics awards throughout the process.
She did. I'm starting to think that the Metcalf train, by the time voting closed, the Metcalf train would have cooled. Now I'm starting to wonder if Janney's biggest competition is going to be Mary J. Blige.
She doesn't have the big scene, which is great that she got the nominee despite...
She's very reserved throughout, you're
the
right.
...the big scene, but she's so, like, classy, and she's stealing scenes from the background. We talked about Mudbound in our Netflix original movies pod.
We're going to go back and do an Oscar Sprint profile on it.
We didn't love it back then.
Nope.
We love the Mary J. Blige performance.
Yes.
We love the performance by Jason Mitchell. We didn't love the movie. We loved the cinematography, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah, but, another big win for that movie, but yeah.
So we're going to have to go back and rewatch that and reevaluate, I think. It definitely got more love than we thought. Look, Leslie Manville is the shocker in this one. Looking at the stats real quick, 26 out of 32 had Mary J. Blige 6 weeks ago and yesterday. So that she did build some momentum throughout the process.
I can't wait till you get to Manville's numbers. Go ahead.
All 32 had Janney and Metcalf.
Rightfully so.
Throughout the process. Octavia Spencer, 21, had her on Gold Derby back 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, so the majority, she had some momentum. But like I said, I just didn't buy into it for whatever reason. But good for her.
19 had her yesterday.
And it even started going down. 21 6 weeks ago, 19 yesterday.
Feinberg had four out of the five. He had Holly Hunter in place of Leslie Manville. And look, Gold Derby, 8 out of the 32 had Leslie Manville 6 weeks ago. The same eight had Leslie Manville yesterday. So
there are 8 people that review movies that have any idea what they're talking about.
they did a nice job.
Total shock? Look, she's a threat. If she won this award, would you be shocked?
I would not. No. We're going to talk about it. We'll listen to our Phantom Thread pod coming up.
Definitely. Coming out later this week, we'll go reviewing last year's Best Supporting Actress nominees. Obviously, Viola Davis did win it for Fences.
Yeah, no
brainer.
Was she
a supporting actress or was she a lead actress? That was the argument. Michelle Williams of Manchester by the Sea. Octavia Spencer, again, for Hidden Figures. Nicole Kidman for Lion. And Naomi Harris nominated for Moonlight. Great performance by Harris, too, in Moonlight.
Yeah, that was another strong year. Viola Davis was just so otherworldly good that it was kind of undeniable there.
Without question, but also had far and away the most screen time.
Yes.
Out of any of the nominees, yes. Which again brought up the question, was she a lead actress or was she actually supporting?
Mm-hmm.
We'll move on to our next category, Best Supporting Actor. Another interesting one. The Academy wasn't playing around this year. They're going for some ratings, I think.
This was surprising.
Willem Dafoe for The Florida Project.
Not surprising.
Woody Harrelson for 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Richard Jenkins for Shape of Water.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Plummer, I told you.
You got me.
Sam Rockwell for 3 Billboards. So obviously the thing that pops out, 2 guys nominated from the same movie. And we're going to see the cannibalistic effect that may have on either of their chances to win it.
Somewhere, we hope, Armie Hammer is still dancing. We just hope he does like a Gronk. He lost the Super Bowl, but he just went dancing anyway. Gronkowski, that is.
I am.
We also like sports.
I am beside myself that Armie Hammer. I think Armie Hammer's performance is the most criminally underrated and overlooked performance of any movie this year.
And honestly, I thought this was a weaker category where you can open up the field to like 20 guys. Patrick Stewart from Logan, the guys from Get Out, the guys from Detroit, the guys from Mudbound. You can really open up the field.
I think it was Mark Ellis this morning on Twitter, who one of the Schmoes Knows guys, who said the problem with Logan not getting nominated is that Patrick Stewart wasn't a good enough seamstress. Taking a shot at the Phantom.
How is there not a Stolberg in that 5 either?
That's another big outrage,
Shape of Water or Call Me By Your Name. I mean, he could have been there. So it's an interesting 5. I don't think we dislike any of those 5 performances. However, I think we like others more. So listen to that pod. That's going to be some variance.
Look, we got to stop with this Christopher Plummer thing. I've yet to see it. We're going to do an Oscar Sprint profile on it. I've heard nothing but rave reviews about Plummer's performance in it. You have seen it a couple times.
It's good. There's no question it's good, but it's like Stoneface Mark Wahlberg versus Plummer. You know, he's just going off and Stoneface Mark Wahlberg is just like, you know, what do you think, goat? I don't know. It's just like, you know.
Cancel Mark Wahlberg.
Plummer's performance is good. We will talk about it. We do have to add that pod now.
Gun to your head, though. Do you think... I mean, is this a thank you for saving our $100 million ass nomination, or is this a worthy nomination for Christopher Plummer?
I mean, again, these 5 names make sense. I'm like, I don't hate any of their performances. They're all very good. I just have some variance. And Plummer, he's on like the fence. Like he could be a 4 or 5 for me, but I think... You know, Woody Harrelson, was it enough of a performance? Willem Dafoe, 1 great scene. We talked about that.
Dafoe had a lot of critics' awards, though. I don't have so much of a problem with him, even though I don't think he'll win. But he was he had the momentum going in to the Golden Globes, and it kind of stopped because Sam Rockwell started winning everything.
Yeah, I mean, Richard Jenkins is lovable, irresistible to everybody, right? You know, especially his character
in
that
movie. He plays good characters, too.
Yeah, he's got his moments. Yeah, and Rockwell, I'll be honest with you, the more I watch 3 Billboards, the less I love it, and I respect it, and I like his performance, but I don't think it's a slam dunk that Sam Rockwell's going to win.
You have the same feel. I mean, the backlash that 3 Billboards has been facing from everyone criticizing the Academy, the critics, and everyone else for embracing the racist movie...
There are racist characters in the movie. That's not what I have a problem with.
I'm not saying it is. I'm saying the amount of backlash, you're not alone in thinking that there's problems with the movie, but also it probably is going to affect some winning here. I mean, McDormand and Rockwell have been the 2 big favorites, but there's a lot of
wave. It's possible. It's possible.
Them.
We've talked about throughout our podcast that, you know, showing ugly things doesn't mean you're glorifying those ugly things. And I think Three Billboards has a moral stance that is something that I can get behind, despite the fact that they show some just horrifically ugly things, and they show characters saying awful things to one another, and Sam Rockwell's like atop that list of characters.
Oh, most reprehensible, yeah.
Do, you know, heinous stuff. So, yeah, I think that performance can get dinged for other reasons, though, and that screenplay can get dinged for other reasons, and the movie that can get dinged for other reasons, plot holes, and definitely some moments where Sam Rockwell, like the stuttering voice, anytime he brings up his mother, that doesn't play as well upon rewatch. You know, we're gonna get into that.
It's gonna be interesting. Definitely gonna be worth seeing our Oscar deep dives, our Oscar category deep dives. Best Supporting Actor last year went for Michael Shannon in Nocturnal Animals. Where the hell was Michael Shannon's nominee for Shape of Water?
He was awesome in that.
If you're gonna give Shape of Water 13 noms, how does he not get one for Best Supporting Actor? But anyway. Dev Patel for Lion, Lucas Hedges for Manchester by the Sea, who has been in everything.
Yeah, Lady Bird and Three Billboards this year.
Jeff Bridges in Hell or High Water, and the winner, Mahershala Ali.
Yeah, everybody had him. Yeah, he was the winner for
Moonlight, and he's the new True Detective season 3 lead on HBO.
I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, why not? Give him a shot.
I like him. Season 1. So to look at the projections, they've been a bit all over the place. Defoe and Rockwell, all 32 on Gold Derby, had them back when. They had them yesterday.
Those are the two biggies.
13 out of 32 had Harrelson as a final, and 12 out of 32 had him 6 weeks ago, so he was not a favorite.
Yeah, we talked about that when we did the Three Billboards pod. He was a favorite early in the year, and then he just kind of fell off, and I thought there was no way, but hey.
Richard Jenkins, 27, had him 6 weeks ago, 28 yesterday.
People love that performance.
And Christopher Plummer, 20, had him yesterday, 21 had him 6 weeks ago. In terms of Feinberg, he had 4 out of the 5 right. He had Armie Hammer, and he had Christopher Plummer involved for most of the recent award season. He substituted like somebody, I think it was Harrelson, last second, and came back to bite him a little bit, but I guess he would have gotten 4 out of 5 either way. So he had Hammer over Plummer, but he's usually right.
I'm a stand for what Armie Hammer did in that movie. I think I personally, I mean, it's personal opinion, so take that for, you know, the grain of salt that it's worth. I have his a performance even better than Chalamet's, but you know,
it was a great performance that I figured would have got a nod. It's strange that it didn't. It wasn't an in-your-face, showy performance necessarily, which is a testament to this guy's abilities.
A lot of stopping and starting, which is tough to.
But it's strange because you have the quiet performance getting rewarded in the Best Supporting Actress category, but the Best Supporting Actor category, you have the big emotional men, right? That's
a good point.
You have the guys with the scenes, right? You don't have a Leslie Manville in this category. Mm-hmm. You don't have a Mary J. Blige in this category with the quiet, reserved, classy performance, and like Casey Affleck last year, right? So it's strange.
Definitely an interesting thought, and we're going to get more interesting as we dive into it, and we'll save a lot of stats and information and trends for when we do the single category deep dives that we're going to do is coming up. We'll move on to Best Original Screenplay. Nominees are The Big Sick. Woohoo!
Yeah, we don't want to read books, so we're not going to do adapted screenplay. We'll go over it, but yeah, original screenplay.
Yeah, The Big Sick. Get Out, again, Jordan Peele getting on there. Lady Bird, again, Greta Gerwig getting on there. Shape of Water, Three Billboards Outside in Ebbing, Missouri. So interesting, Martin McDonagh gets the original screenplay nod, doesn't get the Best Director nod.
Really excited for Kumail and Emily V. Gordon with The Big Sick there. We've been touting that screenplay for a while.
Yes.
Well, the way they change kind of the rom-com genre. And there's a lot of genre busters in this category, so that's kind of refreshing, even though we have some beef with Shape of Water and Three Billboards for that matter. But there's definitely juggling going on in those screenplays, juggling tone, juggling genre, and it makes sense that they, of course, would Get Out being as funny as it is, as scary as it is, the emotional arc of Greta Gerwig's story with how funny that movie is. So it's really refreshing to see some comedies. This is like the year of the comedy getting acknowledged, but those are 5 worthy nominees. I have some quibbles with Shape of Water. We had some major plot holes in that, and Three Billboards, to be honest.
We have quibbles with Shape of Water as a whole. Obviously, the Academy holds it in bigger prestige and reveres it more than we do. 13 nominations speaks for itself. You hit on the main point. I'm thrilled that The Big Sick is getting some recognition. It deserves to get something, at least a nomination somewhere, if not Holly Hunter, if not Ray Romano, who I personally wouldn't have done, but I heard him getting a lot of pub. Then yes, I'm beyond thrilled that it gets recognized here for an original screenplay nom. Who knows? Maybe they could pull it out. It would hurt my heart to see Shape of Water beat Lady Bird and Get Out in both this category and the directorial
category. To me, this is between Get Out and Lady Bird, but we'll see. I mean, we'll see if our minds change. Maybe we can actually get a hold of these scripts now that we're deep into award season and read them.
At what year? When do we get to see the Academy voting? When are they going to finally release that to the people? Because I need to, like, for the category where it's Shape of Water, Get Out, and Lady Bird, I need to see the breakdown. I just need to see how those
two finish. Be upset if those two, like, split a lot of the vote, and then somehow Shape of Water is, like, the other one that splits it a little bit. Or I would be upset if compromise candidate wins here.
I would be upset if it was a blowout, too. I mean, it's not a blowout.
It can't be a blowout. This category has been in flux for a while in terms of the projections. The Big Sick only had 23 out of 32 yesterday, 22 6 weeks ago. Yes, Get Out, Lady Bird, Shape of Water, and Three Billboards were thought of to be nominees. 31 for Get Out, 31 for Lady Bird, 30 and 29 for Shape of Water, 31 and 30 for Three Billboards. Again, that's final projections yesterday and 6 weeks ago. So, yes, this seemed like a big four. The fifth was all over the map. It was The Post. It was a lot of different movies in that five spot. The Big Sick took it.
Yeah, it took it over The Post, took it over Phantom Thread, which I saw getting some, people were a little outraged that Paul Thomas Anderson didn't get an original screenplay, but they gave him the director. It could be a flipping between Paul Thomas Anderson and Martin McDonagh. You know, sorry we didn't give you the directing nominee, so here's your original screenplay nominee. Sorry we didn't give you the original screenplay nominee, so here's your directing nominee for those two guys.
Yeah, I think that makes sense to me, though. Like, Martin McDonagh does some dazzling things with that script. I mean, he's on a balance beam. Paul Thomas Anderson's more controlling it as a director, and it's hard to parse what he did as a director versus what he did on the page.
But at the same time...
But it's so obvious what McDonagh did on the page is what I'm trying to say.
Do you control Daniel Day-Lewis and Leslie Manville? Or do you just put the camera on and say...
We'll talk about how Daniel Day-Lewis had a lot to deal with that. Exactly. So Feinberg nailed the five. So he's back in the groove there. And original screenplay is going to be a wide open category come Oscar night.
Yeah, last year's nominees in the category with The Lobster... which got a lot of love, kind of turning into a cult favorite. La La Land, obviously, Hell or High Water, 20th Century Women, and the winner again was Manchester by the Sea by Kenneth Lonergan. All right, we're going to go now to the categories that we probably won't be giving single episode shots to. I mean...
We might do a other categories episode or talk about it in an Oscar pool projection thing. Yeah,
we're only two men. There's only so many times, so many hours in the day. Best Adapted Screenplay is where we'll go. Next nominees are Call Me By Your Name.
Favorite.
Which has been the heavy, heavy favorite for a while.
James Ivory.
Disaster Artist, so it does get a nomination.
It didn't get shut out. And the script is very good because the source material is nutso.
Bonkers.
It's bonkers. And that episode was... entertaining to us and the preparations just because of Tommy Wiseau.
If you need to listen to one thing, just go listen to Mike's telling of how Tommy Wiseau is reportedly or rumored to have come into his money. It is
it's a spoiler section addendum, but yeah, if you're not going to see The Disaster Artist, or obviously if you've seen it, then yeah, that's worth listening to. It's nutty.
Logan gets a screenplay. Nice to see Logan gets an Oscar.
I'm pumped, man. Yeah. The adaptation was from a comic book.
Yeah.
Look at that.
That's awesome. Molly's Game getting in. So Aaron Sorkin's directorial debut gets
in. We like the X-Men.
And Mudbound, once again, finding itself with a mother.
Molly's Game was a cool movie. And Mudbound was a script that we're still wrestling with. And a story that we're still wrestling with.
Yeah, I'm happy for Dee Reese, but the movie has had its warts. But maybe it'll change on when we get ready for the Oscars and profile.
We knew it was a weaker category. Aaron Sorkin's usually money.
He must be so upset that he didn't get a directorial nom.
Yeah, it makes sense to me, but because there's just so much exposition in that movie where Jessica Chastain talks for 2.5 hours in that movie.
Which I have no problem with.
Nonstop. Her and Idris Elba. And it's great. And it's West Wing dialogue for some of it. I wish it was a little more Steve Jobsian, for my taste, more a little argument, but it's a lot of exposition. So that book has got to be fascinating.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I've only seen read tidbits of it.
It makes some sense that that's involved. But Logan was the big surprise, a comic book getting adapted into a movie, and now we have a comic book adaptation. Best Oscar nominee?
And nerds everywhere rejoice. Moving on to Best Foreign Language Film, A Fantastic Woman from Chile, The Insult from Lebanon, Loveless from Russia, On Body and Soul from Hungary, and The Square from Sweden are the nominees.
I'm pretty sure that whoever wins the Golden Globe for Best Foreign Film, just the Oscars. No, the Oscars just don't nominate that movie. This is like happening a lot. I'm going to have some stats down the line for you on that. I probably should have had them today. I'm very surprised In the Fade didn't get a look.
That's the big one, the big omission. A lot of people didn't have In the Fade.
And Foxtrot. Foxtrot was getting love from everywhere, and it didn't
You saw The Square, right? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, The Square is weird, but it's like so watchable. I mean, it's like a Tuesday night watch. It's got a cool soundtrack-ish for some of the songs, but it's nutso. It's completely nuts, and it's controversial and abrasive and in your face, but also somehow slow and foreign and as well. So it's a weird movie.
A Fantastic Woman also getting a lot of love from critics, and 93 Metascore, which is incredibly high.
Loveless is supposed to be the favorite. That would be my guess right now, even though A Fantastic Woman would make some sense. But I don't want to say his name because I'll butcher it, but that director of Leviathan, for the Russian director.
If you could sound out his name for us, that'd be great.
Uchkin Vrukskragilwogan. Sorry.
Cancel that guy.
Cancel Russia.
Best animated feature.
I'm trying to say he's great.
Best animated feature. Mike tweeted about the Boss Baby this morning. It got a lot of play.
Boss Baby pod coming.
A lot of people were all over it.
No way, please.
Boss Baby was nominated. It was a fight that broke out between Michelle Kerr and David Caithness on
Twitter. I think
Twitter.
If I see everything else five times, then I'll watch the Boss Baby and Ferdinand, but it's going to be hard. I want to see Coco because it's Pixar.
Yeah, and they removed the mini Frozen movie at the top of it that took up the first hour and a half.
The Breadwinner I will see, and Loving Vincent I saw, but yeah, there's
Boss
other
Baby, The Breadwinner, Coco, Ferdinand, Loving Vincent. Coco's going to win.
Coco's going to win.
Yeah, that's the everyone.
Loving Vincent's just a boring movie if you're not an art history major, but it's like
the aesthetic of it is beautiful.
Shocking visuals, like it's so it's absurd.
Can an animated film have
beautiful
cinematography?
Well, I mean, they did one of those Waking Life things where they filmed actors just talking, and then they drew with oil paint.
Yeah, it's
Van Gogh style oil paints over it, so it was unbelievable.
Oil pants?
Oil pants.
All right. Best documentary feature.
This was weird.
Abacus, Small Enough to Jail, Faces Places, which is the highest rated Metacritic score of the year.
Yeah, that wasn't surprising.
Icarus, Lost Men in Aleppo, and Strong Island.
Yeah, Last Men in Aleppo was a surprise because it's over City of Ghosts and Cries for Syria, those other two Syrian documentaries. So I haven't seen Last Men in Aleppo yet. I saw the other two. They both made me cry. They're just brutal to watch, but so good. Jane was the big miss here. That was just a crowd pleaser from start to finish by about Jane Goodall, the movie about the zoologist and the longtime personality
lives
who saved
with apes.
Saved the apes. Yeah, about
Strong Island. I was surprised to see getting a nom too. I mean, it's not one I've seen. But
about Sigourney Weaver.
Followed
yes.
it some, but yeah. There you go. Documentaries. Check them out. I love documentaries. We gotta watch.
Yeah, we watch a lot of those. That means we're old now.
That is what that means, as a matter of fact, yes.
So we get to watch some new ones now. I didn't love Icarus. I mean, that was one that I couldn't really pay attention to. That was on Netflix. We did it for our Netflix pod that I think we forgot to review. We watched it, but we forgot to review.
Give us a 3-second review of Icarus.
Boring.
All right.
No, but it's like, I thought it was going to be about one thing. It's not. It's about something else, which is fine. I like documentaries that do that.
It sounds like my review of The Phantom Thread.
Again, I don't like a movie with Russians in it. Uh-oh. I'm in trouble.
Just cancel Russia forever.
I'm going to hack my computer tomorrow.
Cancel Putin. Best cinematography. Blade Runner 2049. Nice to see them get a nomination.
If you saw this movie in IMAX, it's undeniably great in terms of how it looks.
Pretty colors. Darkest Hour, I was surprised to see get a cinematography, but why not? I was very surprised by the cinematography in it. Dunkirk, obviously. Mudbound.
Yeah, Mudbound in a small
Rachel
screen.
Rachel Morrison, you're going to hear it all everywhere, but we'll say it too. The first woman to be nominated for cinematography.
All-female crew on that, baby.
Yeah, good for her. Also, I read it was Netflix's first Oscar nomination that wasn't documentary-related.
I'm shocked that everybody watched this on the small screen and gave it best cinematography. That's
fair point.
That's surprising.
In Shape of, and maybe that's a play by the Academy too, to kind of not to be inclusive of the streaming services because they're the ones with the money right now.
We said it back when, and it looked great. And I mean, listen, if you saw Dunkirk or Blade Runner on the IMAX, then you're nodding your head right now because those are just, I mean, you watch those movies as a mouth breather. Your jaws just dropped. It makes sense.
Shape of Water was the fifth one. Obviously, because it has to be nominated in every
category.
It's
a fairy tale, real life fairy tale. Merman.
Best film editing, Baby Driver.
Yeah.
As Mike does a backflip, Dunkirk, I, Tonya, The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Listen, Christopher Plummer couldn't have saved Baby Driver. I wish he could have, because nobody paid attention to that movie after Kevin Spacey happened. And it's unfortunate because I think it should have been at least in the mix, like probably doesn't get voted on at the end of the day. But that was a hugely popular movie over the summer with critics.
That's getting a couple.
Got some blowback, got some technical awards.
Technical noms, yeah.
Edgar Wright's the man.
Sound mixing, Baby Driver again gets nominated for that, as does Blade Runner 2049. Dunkirk, The Shape of Water, and Star Wars, The Last Jedi.
Finally, Star Wars. We did a two-part podcast on that, baby. Spoilers,
very
non-spoilers.
Polarizing.
Very polarizing, which is surprising to me to this
me
day.
Me too.
I don't know how that's a people.
Because
hate
when
that
a
movie.
Man and a manly man, man running world, man.
I don't.
That's
get
basically
it.
The argument against Star Wars.
Like Blade Runner, I could see people hating it because they wake up in a cold sweat with popcorn all over their belly because they fell asleep because it's kind of a boring movie. But Star Wars is just like a great steak.
Maybe
what
people
are, we doing?
Are just tired of Harrison Ford, and this is their way of saying it.
Well, yeah, I don't get it.
I don't
really
get it either,
get
but
it.
You're a misogynist. Tell if us. You didn't like Star
no,
Wars.
No, don't say that. No, there's, I mean, I know there's some hardcore nerdage going on against it. We have hardcore nerdage in the other way.
Yes, there are.
Yeah.
Best sound editing, Star Wars gets on there again, Last Jedi. Shape of Water, Dunkirk, Blade Runner 2049, Baby Driver. Baby Driver getting a lot of technicals. Blade Runner getting a lot of technicals. Star Wars has a couple. It's nice to see. The little wider known blockbusters. Kind
five
of.
Worthy movies there. I can't argue. I'm pretty happy about those last few categories.
Best visual effects. Blade Runner finds it getting in there again. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 getting a best visual effects nom. Kong Skull Island. Star Wars The Last Jedi as well. And War for the Planet of the Apes.
Andy Serkis in common with a couple of those. Listen, I wanted to touch the screen. I thought the apes were real. It was just...
You shouldn't touch wild monkeys.
No. I thought those apes were real.
If you see a monkey in the wild, you shouldn't touch it, is what I'm saying to you. I might be saving your life with this information.
You might be. But and yes, Blade Runner, that future was scary realistic. And Star Wars...
Not as scary as the one we're about to have.
Right. Star Wars is a little bit cartoonish. Kong Skull Island, a little bit cartoonish. I would have rather have seen Thor, Ragnarok over maybe Guardians of the Galaxy, but they're both awesome. They're both Disney, Marvel. It makes sense.
Nice to see Marvel getting some serious recognition.
Glad to see five blockbusters. I'm glad they didn't put best visual effects as Gary Oldman's face. You know, like, that's BS. That's just like trying to add a category for them.
So best makeup and hairstyling, Darkest Hour.
It's Gary Oldman's face.
Darkest Hour,
but
Victoria.
That's where it should be.
Victoria and Abdul and Wonder are the only three nominations there.
Judi Dench does not wear makeup. I'm convinced. No, she's a guy. She's a goddess.
She's the third member of our crew right now. We got nothing but nice things to say about
Dame Judi Dench. Shirts on, anti Maggie Smith.
best costume design goes to Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, the Wonder. The Wonder.
Oh, sorry.
Makeup was good, by the way, too.
That's your input.
Hold on. Go back. That was good, too.
Glad we paused for that. Best costume design goes to Beauty and the Beast, getting a nomination. Nice to see. Darkest Hour, Phantom Thread, The Shape of Water, and Victoria and Abdul. Phantom Thread and Darkest Hour, to me, are going to be tough to beat, I would think, for costume design. But I'm not a seamstress, so what do I know?
Yeah, it's pretty eye-popping. I mean, we wear jeans from 6 years ago.
You could fit stains, into yours.
Stains on our t-shirts. Tommy Hilfiger jeans still.
I wear my jeans from 6 years ago as sleeves now.
But it's snug, that's for sure.
Best production design goes to Beauty and the Beast once again, Blade Runner 2049, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, and Shape of Water.
Makes sense.
Like you say, it's nice to see the blockbusters get some love because the Oscars shouldn't and I hope won't turn into the Independent Spirit Awards. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, it's nice to see you got to get blockbusters more involved. There are some with decent enough stories.
I mean, where's the money going? The money's going to the blockbusters. They're the best of the best are working on these movies because you're paying them the most money.
Right.
And you're putting the most money into those products. So it makes sense that you would award these at the end of the day because it's the best looking product of the year. It's the best looking movies of the year. And I don't disagree with these nominations.
Yeah, making a film with a $100 million plus budget shouldn't automatically exclude you from Academy recognition.
Right. It's not the dollar for dollar awards. Right. It's not the... You know, Florida Project would win.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and if it was, Florida Project would win everything.
Right.
Best original score, Dunkirk! Yeah, let's go!
TikTok.
God damn, can we not give this to Alexander Desplat? Shape of Water score was fine. It was fine.
It's Amelie's
not
score.
Dunkirk. Phantom Thread gets nominated. Shape of Water, Star Wars, Last Jedi. Nice to see John Williams landing another nomination there. And Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I want to say this is John Williams' 51st nomination. So John Williams, just as a little factoid to have, because God bless Wikipedia, he's won 23 Grammy Awards, 7 British Academy Film Awards, 5 Academy Awards, 4 Golden Globe Awards. He has 51 Academy Award nominations, which is second all-time only to Walt Disney.
He wins Best
Man.
Conductor ever.
Best Man. Best Human. Best Original Song will go for Mighty River for Mudbound, from Mary J. Blige, Mystery of Love by Call Me By Your Name, from Sufjan Stevens, Remember Me by Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez, from Coco, Stand Up for Something in Marshall, music by Diane Warren, lyrics by Lonnie Arlin and Diane Warren, and This Is Me from The Greatest Showman, which is a big sing-along hit and everybody loves.
Honestly, I am a steak-eating American. I'm a non-musical person, and I dance and sing in my mind, not in real life, to This Is Me and all the Greatest Showman songs. It won me over. I can't believe I saw that movie and it won me the freak over.
They did something very smart in the marketing of that, in that they set up around the country sing-along versions so you can go into the theater, watch it, and sing the songs with as the movie was playing.
That would be my nightmare. But in leather seats, sitting down and listening to the beautiful audio. I mean, it's a big screen experience and it's worth it. If you love musicals, obviously you like it. I'm a hardened heart of a man, and I went to that.
You are such a... You're, it's just
and
such
enjoyed,
an act.
I enjoyed
you
myself.
You are a pile
I can't
of mush when you get to know you.
I don't know if it was good. I don't know if it was good, like, in terms of... I think P.T. Barnum was kind of a scumbag going back.
That's the history, yeah.
Anyway, but... So it's, like, weird, but obviously Hugh Jackman's awesome in it. You know, it's a handsome contest between him and... what was the kid? From
Efron.
Zac Efron. Yeah, I mean, Michelle Williams is great, and the music is great. La La Land people, they did a great job.
Best live action short, DeKalb Elementary, The 11 O'Clock, My Nephew Emmett, The Silent Child, Watu Wot, All of Us. I know none of those. I'm a bad person.
Nobody knows any of those.
I deserve to be hurt.
Nobody knows any of those. Although maybe we'll check out a, you know, best live action short, you know, presentation at some point.
Maybe, yeah.
It's in theaters. Movie Pass it up.
Dip our toe. Best animated short, Dear Basketball, because we need to give Kobe Bryant Oscar since you can't win
Look
NBA
at that.
Titles
yeah.
anymore. Garden Party, Lou, Negative Space, Revolting Rhymes. Once again, I'm a horrible person. I've done a lot of bad things in life. I deserve shame.
No, I'm with you.
And best documentary short being the last category, Edith and Eddie, Heaven is a Traffic Jam on the 405, which has to win because everyone always complains about traffic in LA.
Oh, really?
That's just the thing. I don't know anything about any of these, but everyone bitches about traffic in LA.
Huh.
They must see the title and be like,
Heroin's on Netflix.
Oh, good to know.
Well, so we can watch
cutting off my
it
joke. That's
easily.
Good. Heroin, Knife Skills, and Traffic Stop are the final. So overall thoughts of these.
I listened to your jokes on when I actually clicked the podcast. You're pretty funny.
Hey, thanks, man.
You're an acquired taste, but you're pretty funny.
Your input today has been stellar.
It's early. I was up early. Wow, we got through them all. What are your overall thoughts, Mikey?
Sasha Stone, who I love and is a great follow on Twitter. I want to give her account a shout out. She is at Awards Daily. She's a writer.
She's on the Gold Derby stuff too.
Yeah, she's great. She made the point that this is a unique year in that you have three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, and you have Shape of Water, which is the favorite in a lot of categories and has the most nominations. Those are movies that are driven by a 60-year-old female protagonist, or at least lead in three billboards, and a 40-year-old female lead and protagonist in Shape of Water. Doesn't happen often. The Academy doesn't usually give recognition to middle-aged and older women female leads, and it's nice to see that happen in this year. I mean, it's been nice to see the not only the social movements with the Time's Up and opening the door to minorities and all that, but usually, and this is a quote from one of her tweets, and she's absolutely right, women are chewed up and spit out in the industry.
Right.
And, you know, you only see the younger women getting play and the them building themselves up and either being sex objects or being objects of desire and used for those. So it's nice to see that the older women, the middle-aged women, are getting their recognition and getting their due and driving these movies to such critical acclaim.
It makes sense when you include the other half of the population a little bit. It's not like they're doing it to a great extent yet. I mean, they're just look at Best Director and all the, you know, people under consideration. Yes, Dee Reeves and Patty Jenkins, maybe a little bit. Wonder Woman and Mudbound there. But there wasn't a lot. You know, Kathryn Bigelow maybe with Detroit. But there wasn't a lot of, you know, elite contenders. You know, say what you want about other movies. There wasn't a lot of elite Oscar contenders that were directed by female directors. Now, Greta Gerwig, to me, was a no-brainer from the jump. But yes, more female directors should get opportunities to make movies, and that's been the problem all along. I don't want to say the problem, that's been a problem all along, and it's the same with, you know, African-American directors and minority directors. You know, it's nice to see Jordan Peele and Greta Gerwig get nominations, but they had to hit the ball out of the park on their first try to really to get recognized.
Yeah,
here.
The bar is set so incredibly high for that, and that's not right. You're absolutely right.
I know, they had to be Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
And yes, we got lucky that they were Jackie Robinson, that they were able to just crush it in their first time out.
Yeah, you're right. It's a
great
point.
Do everything right and just nail the compositions. But in reality, there's how many directors out there should have gotten a four-film buildup into a movie that they made this year to be good enough? You look at all these other directors, and they all had that development period in their lives where it wasn't just them doing it on their own as guerrilla filmmakers. It was them being supported by studios, cultivating a list of male directors that they can develop over time. And that hasn't happened for more than half of the population. So hopefully those opportunities start to amass. And I think, you know, the success of a Greta Gerwig and a Jordan Peele can help that, but it's still a problem.
Absolutely. Still is a problem. Just along those lines, it's nice to see when the Academy get it right, at least in nomination terms, where some of the places like the Golden Globes got it wrong. And it's nice to see the effect. It's nice to see that Oscar nominations mean something. I mean, Jordan Peele has been gushing on Twitter all morning about his movie getting all the four nominations.
It's exciting. And it's exciting for genre nerds, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because horror comedies have never been awarded ever.
If you consider Shape of Water a horror, I mean, if you're a horror fan, there are two horror movies nominated for Best Picture this year.
And there's like a bunch of comedies. It's absurd.
It's great. It's fantastic. Good job for the Academy. I think they got a lot right. We can nitpick. I don't know that they got a lot terribly wrong. I mean, what's the biggest omission besides Franco, maybe? Jane not getting for documentary, maybe?
Yeah, Tanya, I thought, you know, Baby Driver was a strong movie this year.
You've been a big Baby Driver.
Big Baby Driver, you know, since the summer and since our first episode. But again, I knew if you didn't have Christopher Plummer saving that movie, you didn't have a chance with it. And The Big Sick, I think, should have been...
Holly Hunter, I'll carry the flag for her all day. I think she still should have been nominated, but I'm not upset at the women that were, because that category is loaded.
The Post has its highs and lows. Darkest Hour has its highs and lows. So it's like I can't hate that they were nominated for Best Picture, but they're good.
Yeah,
it's
usually not like nothing's bad. Some sort of outrage, you know, when the nominations come. And I got
Bridge of Spies, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. Those have been two of the movies that I hated as movies,
right.
Never mind, you know, as Best Picture noms. And, you know, we didn't have one of those stink bombs in the top nine and in Best Picture category this year. So that was refreshing.
Yeah. I mean, hey, hats off to the Academy. Good job. Good job being inclusive. Good job opening
all
your doors.
The, folks on the internet. I think all the podcasts out there are helping the film world and the Academy.
Good job to Mike and I.
Yeah, good job, though.
As first-time podcasters, this is our first year doing this and covering this.
Good job by you. I mean, you're doing all the technical side of things. You pat yourself on the back. I wouldn't. I know you have a bad back.
Reach over there. I just fall, cry. No, look, it's been a fun ride. It's going to keep on going on. This is just the first downhill slope in the roller coaster. We're about to climb another apex, and we'll be with you all the way through Oscar Sunday, which is, again, March 4th. Jimmy Kimmel's going to host it. It's on ABC. Get ready for the second part of the marketing push, because these movies are going to be out in full force. You're going to see these faces attached to these movies everywhere now, being interviewed, trying to get the media crave and the attention on them. Even though the voting's already closed, it's going to be a fun part coming
up. This is kind of sad, but it's also interesting to think about MoviePass. We're not sponsored by them, but MoviePass. I've seen 25 movies in the theaters, not different movies, but 25 screenings in theaters since November 21st. So they're losing money on me.
I thought you were going to say January 1st, to be honest.
I've gone to a lot of movies. But, I mean, it's like, all right, we're doing the movie critic thing. We're doing the podcast. So going every other night almost?
Yes.
It's easy. Hey. It's easy. Get the movie pass. $10 a month.
So get yourself familiar. Get yourself familiar with these movies. Get these nominees.
I'm drinking Diet Coke like Trump, though. That's a problem. Like, I'm drinking Diet Coke I wouldn't have drunken if I wasn't going to the movies not having to pay for it.
The president does it, and he's the pillar of health. He just had his physical.
It might be 239 pounds as well.
Get yourself familiar. Either go through, see these movies. If you can't see them, listen to our spoiler section on all these Oscar Sprint profiles. We're doing these for you. We want to keep on churning them out. We're going to be with you all year long. Strap in. This is the most exciting time for the movie year and the Academy in terms of the awards races and the Academy selection. So let's go full bore. We're into the sprint now. We're not stopping until March 4th.
We're having fun. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram, Facebook.
Yeah, we are Mark, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram. MMO_pod on Twitter. We are Mike, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com if you want to email us. We also have a Reddit name now.
Yeah, we're barely scratching on the Reddit yet.
Yeah, we're barely there, but we're scratching the surface.
It's like you got to have a month where you, like, you know, they like basically audit you before you get.
You're talking to like the two most technologically inept people in the world. So the fact that we're able to make a Reddit name is amazing.
We're on
us.
AOL chat rooms.
Yes. Yeah. It's no joke. Your brother will tell you. I had AOL until my senior year of college. I don't know why. I'm a bad person. But yeah, reach out to us. We love hearing your comments. We love giving shout outs. We love hearing your thoughts.
We talk to a lot of people on social media, and we're not social or media quite yet, so it's amazing that's happening. And yeah, we make a lot of corny jokes, both in print form and in
real life
audio form, and dad jokes. We're gonna annoy our daughters someday.
And please, if you enjoy us at all, tell your friends, help us spread the word. That's the only way we have legs with this thing, and we really appreciate it. We got a lot
of stuff in the
audience
is growing. Yeah, we're really excited about it, and we're like doubling in some weeks, which is fun, and we're growing in huge percentage chunks. So again, you know, we know it's early days. We know we're not expecting, you know, to go viral anytime soon, but we like what we're doing. We're jumping in full tilt. We knew we didn't want to do this half ass. We're not. We're trying full tilt. We'll have a website for you eventually. We'll expand our reach on the internet eventually, and we're excited about it. We'll have YouTube presence at one point, even though we're still going on diets and trying to do that. My diet's not going very well.
We'll wear masks.
I went to a restaurant that rhymes with Schmacko Bell last night. So the diet's not going great. Faces for radio.
But we really do appreciate you guys strapping in with us. If you could help us spread the word, that's even better. We got a lot of interesting stuff in the fire, and we're going to see how it plays. So get ready. If we've been sprinting for the last 2 months, then we're
in the dead
heat.
We should have called it a marathon.
Right. Yeah.
We've don't.
Keeled
over and died.
We don't
run,
so we can't relate to the allegory. Check out our episode on the Phantom Thread coming out later this week, and let us know what you thought about this one, and we'll see you soon.